Presented with a plaque for lifetime achievement in writing, Ursula Le Guin replied with a jeremiad on the state of publishing. The audience at the National Book Awards applauded. Bravely, she noted. Welcome to Copyright Clearance and his podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. The 85-year-old novelist of science fiction and fantasy clearly relished the chance to see that more than cocktails were shaken at the annual gala. Le Guin's address invoked an alternative world in which books are written for their own reward and are penned by writers who treasure art and push for change. Andrew Albany, senior writer at Publishers Weekly, has much more to share with us, and welcome back to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Greetings, Chris.
Always good to chat with you. We look forward to seeing you this weekend at the Miami Book Fair. We'll talk about that in greater detail in just a moment. But earlier this week, we saw the National Book Awards, always an important event on the book publishing calendar year. There was a bit of a shadow cast over the event this year, of course. It was Amazon's, but somehow even Amazon got overshadowed by an 85-year-old Ursula Le Guin. Tell us more.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you can read all about our NBA experience on the PW website. We had a number of reporters there this year and at the after parties as well. So first, let me congratulate the winners of this year's National Book Awards. That includes Jacqueline Woodson for Young People's Literature, Louise Glick for Poetry, Evan Osnos for Nonfiction, and Phil Clay for Fiction. You know, it always is Publishing's Night to Shine. The NBA is probably the most prestigious, at least one of the most prestigious accolades in American literature. But as you say, Ursula Le Guin really stole the show. She was there to accept a Lifetime Achievement Award, and what a lifetime it's been for her. That award was presented by Neil Gaiman, and she gave a very brief speech, but it really hit home. In that speech, she called for writers. She called for writers who know the difference between the production of a market commodity and the practice of an art. And she assailed corporate profit masquerading as responsible book publishing or authorship. She also excoriated publishers for putting sales departments over editorial and lashed out at her own publishers even for what she called a silly panic of ignorance and greed for charging public libraries 6 or 7 times more than they charge regular customers for ebooks. Now, I loved Le Guin before, but you know, I love her even more after that statement. You know, she also alluded to the recent Amazon fray. She said that we just saw a profiteer trying to punish a publisher for disobedience and writers threatened by a corporate fatwa. And she derided our compliance in letting commodity profiteers sell us like deodorant and tell us what to publish and what to write. And she closed with a phrase that we've heard often, especially during this Amazon Hachette fray, and that's that books are not just commodities. Books are different. You know, she asked that we not let American literature get sold down the river, and she said that the reward of writing is not profit, but freedom. So just a couple of quick observations. You know, it gives me goosebumps to hear her say those words, especially, you know, coming after the career that she's had. And, you know, the reason why I think this really hit home was that, you know, unlike the binary publisher good, Amazon bad memes that we saw going on throughout the Amazon Hachette struggle, Le Guin really called out both sides for their complicity. And I think she's right to do so. And, you know, these are some of the themes that I look forward to talking with you much more about on Sunday at the Miami Book Fair.
Well, indeed. And, you know, you say that she called out both sides for their complicity. And I think the point you've made today and throughout our discussions about the Amazon Hachette ebook pricing struggle, rather, is that this is very complex. And we're going to get at some of those complexities. And joining you, Andrew Albanese, will be Orrin Teacher, who is the executive director of the American Booksellers Association. We also have the editor-in-chief of The New Republic, who has called for breaking up Amazon as a monopolist in a very important cover story for TNR in October. As well, we've got Astra Taylor, who is author of a book called The People's Platform, which really looks at the promise of the internet and the World Wide Web as a force for democratization and her disappointment in seeing where things have turned out. So we do hope if you're in the Miami area, you can join us for that panel on Sunday afternoon at 3:30. But we have learned that the panel will be carried live on book television. So if you do have access to C-SPAN, book TV, we will be on at 3:30 Eastern Time. So we look forward to everybody joining us, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk about that discussion in the weeks ahead. Now, we're going to just jump ahead to a kind of preview of what you're bound to say at Miami, and so tie it all together for us, Andrew.
Well, you know, Le Guin's comments to me, I think, really play in nicely to what we're going to end up talking about at this panel on Sunday. And I think in one really big way, and that's that, you know, Amazon and Hachette gave us what I see as a golden opportunity to talk about how our reading and writing and publishing future should unfold and how it is unfolding. And Le Guin really, with her speech, challenged us to have that conversation again. But I think she's framed it much more properly. You know, I got up at the crack of dawn to go on CNBC Squawk Box last week and talk about the Amazon Hachette deal briefly. And that was a fine experience, but all of the questions were about the deal terms, and which, of course, we're not allowed to know, and who were the winners and who were the losers. But, you know, I struggled because this is not a winners and losers moment. The game is still very much afoot here, and it really extends well beyond Amazon and Hachette, which, you know, this is broken record time for me, is something I preached a lot on this broadcast. I mean, there's a lot of things to discuss about the way our digital publishing future is developing, and I don't think it's right that we put that all on these two dealmakers, Amazon and Hachette. But if there's a takeaway I might stress in our Miami talk, to, you know, give you a little preview here, about the Amazon and Hachette deal especially, it's for people to remember how Amazon and Hachette ended. For all the public conversation we've had, it ended with a confidential deal. And, you know, with these two supposed adversaries showing us once and again that they're in fact partners. And I will urge all of us in Miami and beyond to have that conversation that Le Guin wants us to have about the future of books and reading. Because Amazon and Hachette were really negotiating terms. That's all they were really doing here. They weren't fighting for the future of the book as much as we would like to think that they were. And as Le Guin suggests, I'd also suggest that, you know, writing and reading and publishing is about freedom. She's right. And I'd add that, you know, profit and freedom need not be mutually exclusive. So at the panel in Miami, I hope we can really delve into, you know, how the public can get involved and how we should really be hoping our reading, writing, and publishing future develops.
Well, you know, the Miami Book Fair is a tremendously popular event with the public there in Miami, so it certainly will start that public conversation, and thanks again, Andrew, for joining us for that. And speaking of conversations in the publishing world, there was one on Thursday in front of Congress, which took up the issue of copyright in education and copyright for the print disabled. But as you noted, an article also on Publishers Weekly, it turned to a discussion of the Georgia State University e-reserve case. Remind us about that case, and what did we hear in Congress?
Yes, so very interesting hearing yesterday before the Congressional Subcommittee on Courts, Intellectual Property, and the Internet, in what was, I think, the last 2014 hearing on a potential overhaul of copyright law for the digital age. And it was interesting to me because it turned into a hearing on the Georgia State e-reserves case. You know, the panel featured AAP's General Counsel Alan Adler, who supports the case, and also your colleague Roy Kaufman, who I thought did a really nice job. So, you know, kudos to Roy for his appearance yesterday. Now, you can read the details in my extended take on the PW site, but you know, as our listeners no doubt know, this case involves the use of digital course readings at Georgia State University and what the publishers claim was widespread infringement. But my takeaway from the hearing yesterday was, if the plaintiff publishers have found it to be tough going in the courts so far, it's not going to be any easier for them to address the issues in Congress. You know, there still might be yet a ruling that favors the publishers out of the appeals courts, because copyright is complex stuff. But I think the hearing yesterday showed that there's probably not going to be a political solution. You know, simply put, I think the optics for the publishers are not very good. You know, at this moment in history, tuition costs are skyrocketing, student loan debt is at crushing levels, and Congress has already cast its attention on the high cost of textbooks. Meanwhile, library budgets are flat, and many are declining, if you know, probably more so than the rate of inflation. And you know, meanwhile, there's, you know, these two of these three publishers who are nonprofits, who are suing this cash-strapped university, are posting pretty decent growth and profit. So I don't see any congressman stepping into that fray. And frankly, given Congress's inability to step into any fray, I don't think I'm out on a limb with that. But one quick note that I'll say, and I'll direct people to the PW site to learn more about it. In his testimony, Alan Adler bemoaned what he called this the new jurisprudence that's expanding fair use. But he didn't get much engagement on that issue. I don't know if it's because the Congress wasn't that up to speed on fair use issues or what, but I think his counterpart, Jack Bernard from the University of Michigan, scored a little higher when he warned the committee that while digital offers us a lot of potential for advancement, digital readings are licensed, and a world in which licenses govern all uses could be dangerous for free speech, research, and education. I thought that was a pretty salient point to make, but whether any of this was actually, you know, registered with Congress, we'll have to wait and see. But you can read my full take on the hearing on the PW website.
Well, you ask whether any of it registered with the Congress women and men in the room. I didn't see any of them sleeping, so at least there was that.
Well, at least their eyes weren't closed.
At least their eyes weren't closed, exactly. Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly. We'll see you in Miami, and thanks as always for joining us today on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to the podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky for Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.